Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talk to Manuel Marquez. Manuel is a member of the Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 1281, and he's the grievance coordinator for QP 3913. If those last four numbers seem familiar, it's because they just were recently in the news. Representing the University of Guelph's teaching assistants and sessional lecturers, 3913 avoided having to go out on strike last weekend and signed a new collective agreement with the university, but as 3913 was negotiating with their employer, they were stuck in their own difficult negotiations with their staff member. Labor unrest between labor unions on campus is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. I should say the second of this week's Guelph Politicast. So last Saturday night, QP 3913 and the 2,500 TAs and sessionals it represents achieved a deal with the U of G just several hours shy of a strike deadline of 12:01 a.m. on Monday. No small feat, right? But the executive and negotiating team of 3913 can't rest on their laurels because there's still one more negotiation left for them with the union that represents their own employees, QP 1281. Or rather, make that employee, as in one. Manuel Marquez is the only employee of QP 3913 working out of their office on the second floor of the University Center, or at least he was until 2 weeks ago when he was locked out by his employer after being unable to reach an agreement after 6 months of negotiations. There are a couple of things that attracted me to this story. One, that Manuel is one man represented by one QP union working for another QP union. And two, we have a labor group locking out their unionized employee. On top of that, QP 3913 has posted a great deal about the ongoing negotiations with 1281, which seemed to me goes against the typical labor approach of not negotiating through the media. So there's a lot to unpack here. The nature of labor negotiations, the dynamics between the QPs, and what they were fighting for. So I invited Manuel into the studio to get his story, the present state of negotiations, and how he was locked out at a time you would think that his employers would need him the most. For balance, I reached out to QP 3913 for their side of the story, and I will have more about that after the interview with Manuel. But before beginning, I just have one more disclosure. I recorded this podcast at CFRU, whose employees, like many others at the U of G, are represented by QP 1281, but Manuel is the only member of 1281 affected by the lockout. QP 1281 actually represents many people from many different organizations across several different Ontario University and college campuses. So having said that, I caught up with Manuel Marquez earlier this week in studio. Manuel Marquez, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Adam.
So, to be clear, just from the start, you are the only employee for QP 3913?
That is right. When I first came to the office about 3 years ago, there used to be three employees. Mm-hmm. I was hired as the staff rep assistant. Mm-hmm. There was also a staff representative. And there was an administrative coordinator. Last year, two of those positions got eliminated, and then the staff representative position got reorganized into the grievance coordinator position, mm-hmm. and that is the position I currently occupy.
I just, one of the things that made me want to talk to you was just that idea, or that whole concept, that when you read online 3913 is negotiating with 1281, mm-hmm. 1281 is you, at least in regards to that office.
Right.
Okay. For people who may not be aware of sort of how labor is organized, you work for QP 3913, but you're not a member of QP 3913. Is that purposeful or because 3913 is specifically for the graduate students and sessionals? Is that an unusual thing that you're not part of the union you work for?
No, it's not unusual, especially for union locals the size of 3913 to have employees. In fact, My own union has employees as well, and it's a smaller union in comparison to 3913. Now, in terms of locals that organize workers in the academic sector, it is quite common for them to have staff doing different duties. So it could be administrative duties, and it could be duties related to union representation, i.e. those are the functions in the union that have to do with representing members in the formal complaint process, known as the grievance process, mm-hmm. on disciplinary processes and also at the bargaining table with the employer.
So what do you do as grievance coordinator?
So as I said, it's basically the main job, as the title suggests, is dealing with grievances. Grievances are essentially formal complaints that organized workers have a right to, and they normally involve an institutionalized process where the union is able to represent the workers based on the rights that are established mm-hmm. in the contract, in the collective agreement.
So there's a specific point where you are brought in.
Correct. So usually the process goes, you have a complaint, you bring it to your supervisor. If that is not resolved at that point, then normally the union representative comes in, and that is in this case me. Also, in addition to grievances, we deal with discipline cases. So if the employer is trying to discipline you because, let's say, you steal a pair of scissors or the stapler, they have to follow a process. And part of that process is calling on the union and allowing you to have union representation, because we know what your rights are. We know how the process works. And we sit with members on those processes to ensure that the process itself is fair, and also to ensure that they whatever issue is there is, that it is resolved to the benefit of the member. Of course, we don't want people to be excessively disciplined mm-hmm. When it's not necessary. The third function that I have is negotiations. So I do sit at the bargaining table with Guelph University representing QB 3913.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to that in a minute. I just have one little piece of housekeeping to deal with before that, is that you are the only member of 1281 that works in the 3913 office, but there are other members of 1281 on campus here, including the staff here at CFRU.
That is correct, yeah. We also have members at OPERG. Mm-hmm. Basically all the OPERG staff across the province is unionized under 1281. Mm-hmm. We also have other union staff at the other, we call them the 3900, so mm-hmm. 3903, 3902, 3906. They all have staff, and they are unionized under 1281. And then we also have members who also work in other university organizations, like student unions, and the like, and also in some other progressive organizations like MayWorks, for instance, mm-hmm. In Toronto.
And Gurkhead downstairs is
indeed. Gurkhead here at Guelph as well is a 1281 shop.
So we're phrasing this that there's actually a not insignificant relationship between your union, 1281, and the QP sectors that all represent the graduate students and the sessionals, not just at U of G, but at many post-secondary mm-hmm. institutions across Ontario. So going back into your situation here, you are currently the only employee of 3913. You're providing support, and not just, you know, regular run-of-the-mill support. You know, you're looking after grievance processes, you're negotiating, and of course there was just a huge deal that was just closed between the university and 3913. At what point did your particular negotiation start?
The QB 1281 negotiations started with QB 3913 back in October, early October. Mm-hmm. We only met sporadically. We tried to get the employer, in this case QB 3913, to meet with us more frequently or to have longer meetings. They refused. They only wanted to have short meetings.
What's a short meeting?
Sporadically. We are talking about 3 hours meetings. Normally when you bargain, you set aside the whole day because you don't want to, extend the bargaining round unnecessarily because you want to get into the other businesses of running the union.
Yeah, you want to get it done and then plan for the future.
Exactly. And that's true for both sides, right? For both the employer and the union. The problem in this bargaining round was that the employer, in this case QB 3913, brought us over 200 proposals, 200 changes to the contract. That, by any standard, is a huge number of changes. So given the complexity of such a round of negotiations, we would have expected to have more meetings and longer meetings with them. But they refused to meet in person. They wanted us to bargain over email. Mm-hmm. And it is a negotiation. You cannot do it over email. Email is good perhaps for eBay when you are, bidding and you just want to answer a quick question. But in a negotiation, you really need to figure out what is it that the other side really needs, and then figure out how you can accommodate that without conceding on what you really, really need. Right. So it's about identifying those things, and doing that over email is really hard.
It's something that only kind of comes out in conversation, face to face.
Yeah.
Or failing that, maybe Skype. But the idea is to make it a person to. In-person engagement.
Absolutely, because over email, you don't know the tone. You miss the subtleties of what you are trying to say. It's more prone to misinterpretations. When you're face-to-face, you can very, very quickly clarify. You can ask follow-up questions that would allow you to tease out where things are at.
Right.
It's very hard to do that over email. I mean, I imagine you can do it, but it would take 10 times as longer as a face-to-face conversation.
Mm-hmm. During this negotiation, are you a part of it as the basically the other side negotiating? And do you have somebody with you? Do you have a team working with you?
Yeah. So it's the same format as any other. Collective bargaining negotiation. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you have the employer side, 3913, is the president, Ashley Wilson, the past officer, past officer Cameron Crutch, and the vice president, Edith Wilson. And on the union side, my union, 1281, we had a recent change. So the current chief negotiator is my shop steward, Sheila Wilmont.
Okay.
I sit also as a member of the negotiating committee, and the president of my local also is in the negotiating committee.
Okay. You are a busy man. so you got this contract where it had 200 over 200 changes. I think the number, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is like 280-something, 287,
83. I don't remember now the exact number, but it was It was for sure over 200, close to at least 250 original changes by their own count, by the way. Because originally we started counting them, and you know, after 150, I guess we kind of started losing count. But
you got the idea.
Yeah.
So when you get this agreement, what was the next step for you? What did they want from you?
You mean when we got all these proposals from them? Well, essentially we try to first identify the things where you are closer, the things that are easier to deal with, and that's normally what you do in negotiations. You start with the easiest stuff to have something to work with, and then you tackle the more complicated things. So we tried to do that, but again, it was really hard given the format of the negotiations that 3913 wanted to follow, and the fact that they were asking for many things that were just really hard for us to negotiate on. We are talking about job security, benefits, things that have been in the collective agreement for a really, really long time, and things that are really important for workers, not only in my sector, but across the board, right? These are precisely the same kind of things that 3913 was negotiating with their employer and with Guelph University. Job security, for instance, was one of the things that was a major point, especially for sessional lecturers, right? And it is also the case that QB 1334, the Trades and Services and Custodials Union here on campus, is also negotiating right now. And job security, again, is the main issue in that negotiations. So these are very critical questions for workers, and it's not easy for us just to, you know, say, okay, we are gonna give this away, right? It's something that as workers we feel that we also have to defend, and of course we are also feeling appalled, frankly, that another union is demanding so many concessions around these areas.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk specifically in terms of the job security issue? Like, did they want you to go to contract or?
It's a bit more complicated than that. So, you know, when we talk about job security and regular employment, we are essentially talking about ensuring that when you have a job position, that position is not going to be eliminated, for any number of reasons, and that if there is a change in that position, that you'll be able to remain employed, right? So, for instance, you're not going to be displaced because of technological changes, to give you an example, or that if you, for some reason or another, you need to go on leave, that you can come back to your work.
Right.
Also, when we talk about job security in a broader sense, we are talking about things like regular hours of employment, right? So that you, if you are supposed to work 20 hours, which is part time, that you work 20 hours and you're not going to be working 1 week 40, the other week 10, and the other week 15, right? These are the issues around job security. The way that contracts protect those issues is by limiting what employers can do when they want, for instance, to change a job description or when they want to change a position.
Right. So,
it also sets rules in terms of what happens when a worker is displaced from one position and they have seniority, for instance, we have what it's called bumping rights. So if you have more seniority, then and there is another person who has less seniority, you bump that person in based on the fact that you have been employed for a longer period of time. If it's also, as I said before, there are protections around technological change so that if they implement, let's say, a new filing system, as they did in the office, they moved into a Google Drive, essentially, so that if that is the case and there are employees who are used to the physical filing system, that they don't get displaced just because now there is Google Drive and they don't know that system, so that, you know, the employer then has a responsibility to train those people and that they are not just going to be, you know, on the street because there was a change in technology. So those are the things that are at stake here. We are talking about over 60 concessions. Many of them are in this area of job security.
Okay, so a good portion of them.
Yes.
It was about that issue.
Yeah.
So how did you respond how did your team respond to all these concessions being offered?
Well, obviously we said no. Mm-hmm. We cannot give this.
Straight no to all of them.
Well, we have to say reject. Okay. And we invited them to discuss these things at the table. It took us basically until a mediator from the Ministry of Labor was appointed to our round of negotiations to actually be able to sit with them and be able to explain, this is actually what you are proposing. These are the consequences of all the changes that you are proposing. You are actually hollowing out all the job security that we have in our contract. And at that point, it seemed like we started making what we would call movement, i.e. we were starting to understand each other in terms of what are our needs.
Right.
But at that point as well, they told us, we're going to give you this final offer. They addressed one of our many, many, many concerns regarding job security. And they said, well, we have addressed them all. And you have 1 hour to review it. The document was 273 pages.
Okay.
And of course, we there's no humanly possible to review that. And after that hour, they basically locked me out. And that was last week.
So to recap, the first time you and your bosses sat down together was after the mediator came in.
No, we did sit down a few times, but those conversations were very limited.
Okay.
Because they only wanted to have conversations where we were only allowed to ask questions. We were not really allowed to have a conversation like the one we are having right now.
Right.
And those were really short meetings. So it was only after a few meetings with the mediator that we were able to sit and have a real conversation where we were able to explain, this is actually what we need out of this contract. This is what all this language does.
Right.
And at that point, they started explaining to us a bit what they were trying to do, but then for some reason their timeline, they have some timeline in mind that I'm not sure I understand, that kicked in and they said, well, you know, we are going to lock you out.
What's one of the things I find unusual about this situation is that these aren't people who you know, go to another building and you only see them whenever they're, you know, here negotiating. I mean, you probably don't see the president or the vice president on a daily basis, but you have interactions with the people you work for, which is the union, on a daily basis because it's your job. Mm-hmm. there any, did they give you any kind of indication, like, off the record, like, outside the negotiating realm, like, saying, hey, Manuel, this is what's going on, or, you know, watch out for this? Was there any of that?
Well, not so much, I would say. I think the indications I've had in the past is what I alluded to earlier, that they had reorganized the office, right? And they eliminated positions that existed in the office. I guess that was a bad omen, because as a result of that, the office is now closed. Like, if we step outside of this room right now, mm-hmm. the QB3913 office is just around the corner. Mm-hmm. You'll find it closed. Nobody answers the phone, I often hear members complaining about this. 3913 members complaining about this.
Right.
Part of the work of the staff used to be precisely to answer the phone, and they were always in the office to help members with their inquiries and their issues. So to go back to your question, I think when that happened, the way they did that, which I frankly didn't understand what was the need for that was a big red flag that, you know, something terrible was going to happen in these rounds of negotiations. And indeed, this is what has happened. We received this barrage of demands for concessions.
And this is happening at the same time, you know, there's a no board report out about their negotiations with the university, which means there's a hard deadline in effect where either the university can lock them out or they can go on strike. And that deadline was 12:01 on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Yet here they are, starting a fight with their own one staff member, who you would think would be sort of key to have someone in the office in the midst of all this.
Yeah, it's to me that's the saddest part, that I was locked out at a critical moment for 3913. You know, I part of my job is to negotiate with the university on a day-to-day basis, essentially, because a lot of what happens in these formal complaints cases is that you try to come to a resolution. So it's negotiations, right? So I'm also the person who is working with the collective agreement, their contract, on a day-to-day basis. So I feel that, you know, not having someone like me at the table was bad for this round of negotiations. And professionally, of course, I feel like I would have wanted to be there, because that's my job, right?
Right.
The other thing is that they also gave ammunition, frankly, to the university, because the university was able then to take a moral high ground with all of this. They were essentially saying, we would never lock out our employees. We have nothing to do with what 3913 has done with their own staff. Right. So at a critical moment such as that, when you want to focus your attention on the issues you're having with Guelph University, you are allowing the Guelph University administration to essentially say, well, you know, we are the reasonable ones here. You're the ones who are locking out and acting crazy with your own workers. Right. And what I've also found talking to many 3913 members is that they are really confused about their own bargaining round with the University of Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I feel that if 3913 had spent more time focusing on outreach and using the resources to talk to their members, to allow their members to plug in into this bargaining process, right? And use me and perhaps other staff in that process, that 3913 members would have been more clear on what was going on, and perhaps negotiations would have gone even better than whatever outcome they might have. You know, I hope there was, of course, a good outcome mm-hmm. to these negotiations.
So what do you think was the thought? I mean, you've been a negotiator, so wearing your negotiator's hat, what was the impetus of locking you out a week before possibly going out on strike?
Right. It is something that it's a good question. I'm not sure, frankly, what the answer to that question is. I think that they have a particular vision of what their union should be. And that is fine, of course, but part of being a union is also listening to what other workers are saying. And I think other workers have said very clearly, you know, this is bizarre, this is wrong. A union locking out another union is just wrong. It's mm-hmm. like cannibalism, basically. I think part of it was perhaps not being able to listen to what other workers had to say, but I think also they have mobilized a series of narratives that are what we usually, frankly, hear from coming out of employers.
Right.
So narratives such as, well, you know, 1281 already has a good enough contract. They already have rights that are not worse than anybody else in the sector. And, you know, it is problematic to hear that coming from a union, because, of course, as unionists, we don't negotiate in terms of what the worst paid workers or the workers with the least rights have.
Right.
We negotiate in terms of what we believe that is socially possible and what is fair in terms of the social circumstances, right? So, you know, for a union to come out with those ideas, it sounded like they were there are some, you know, some visions of what a union should be that are inconsistent with what workers would normally be striving for.
And on top of that, and I found this unusual, there are a lot of posts on the QP 3913 website about this negotiation, which just from covering labor issues,
yeah,
it's kind of unusual, because most of the time the comment is no comment until there's an agreement and it's ratified.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, of course, is that when you negotiate, you really want to negotiate at the bargaining table. So that's
right.
Normally why you don't see a lot of details of what, you know, the negotiations are,
right.
What it's actually happening in the table. Because if you start doing that, then, you know, you end up, it becomes a spectacle, right? It becomes,
right.
You know, you have to basically convince all your audience and the public of your arguments. And that just takes time away of...
It's two streams of communication. You're talking at the negotiating table, but you're also talking to...
Yeah, and there's a way in which you do that,
mm-hmm.
of course, but you don't necessarily get into all the details of what you are negotiating, because there are also a lot of technicalities, right? And it is hard to get into everything. But of course, you also at the same time try to maintain the information about what are the main issues and you know how you're trying to address them. the fact that they posted, I think they had at one point like three posts, like you went mm-hmm. to their page and everything was about the negotiations with my union at a time when, you know, their own members were facing the deadline with a strike deadline with their own negotiations, right?
Right.
So I think that goes back to the problem of just, you know, wasting times fighting another union instead of focusing on, you know, standing together to fight for good working conditions and studying conditions, right? Which is what, indeed, my union has also always stood for in this campus and other universities.
And unfortunately, I'm going to have to wrap up soon, but I did note on the 3913 website that it said the lockout had been suspended for this week.
Yeah.
But the office, you as you mentioned, is still locked. It's dark inside in the middle of the day when you expect to find you working away.
Yeah.
So it seems like...
Yeah. So, yeah. So, So one of the issues is that in terms of the suspension, it's literally a suspension. It's not an end to
right.
the lockout. So what they have said is that if we don't get an agreement by the end of the week,
mm-hmm.
we are going to lock you out again.
Mm-hmm.
So they suspended the lockout so that we could sit down to negotiate for a bit. So basically because we are preparing for negotiations and also because of my usual schedule, the hours of work that I had scheduled for this week.
Right.
Today, for instance, I'm not in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And because the office is closed, I also get to work from home, which, you know, is not something that I particularly like. I prefer, you know, working with people. You know,
makes it hard for the
makes it
to
hard.
Access you.
Yeah, makes it hard. It's more convenient in a way, of course. It's more convenient not having to travel every day to Guelph. But at the same time, you know, my work is working with people, and I really cherish that. Right now, the office is closed for those reasons, essentially, because we are still preparing for those negotiations on Thursday and Friday,
mm-hmm.
and also because of my scheduled hours of work for this week.
What is the ideal resolution for you?
Well, I think what we want is a fair deal, right? Like we want to have a deal where the rights that we have in that contract are respected, where any deficiencies are also addressed. So, for instance, one of the few things that we asked was around salaries. The base salaries for employees in the office were stuck at the same rate since 1999. So of course we asked them to increase that, and they are amenable to that. They have said in various occasions that money is not an issue for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it is about the other things. It's about their flexibility to manage workers. So what we want, of course, is that we cannot agree to have a temp agency,
right?
At 3913 in the office, but of course we also, as a union, we respect that workers have a right to organize their unions in a democratic manner and to run them as they wish. So of course we want to respect that, and if we can get an agreement where we can have the job security and the benefits and the union rights, i.e. the 1281s, respected, and at the same time the democratic values that we also respect as a union in 3913, that would be great.
Is it going to be hard for you when this is over to, you know, go back to working with these people that I mean, for lack of a better term, kind of made your life miserable the last couple of months. Is that going to be hard? It's the unusual situation. You are the union being negotiated with right now, so it's all on you.
Yeah, well, you know, when you are the only person in the workplace, right? the only employee. These tough situations are even harder for sure. I mean, lockouts are always tough. Strikes are always tough, right? Like, because they really bring out the conflicts that exist between employers and employees. So I'm not gonna deny that is gonna be hard to come back, but we are unionists. You know, I'm clear on what my job is. My job is to represent 3913 members, and of course I'm gonna do that to the best of my abilities.
Well, I hope you get to do it again soon. And in the meantime, I appreciate you coming in to tell your story. Manuel Marquez, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Alan.
And once again, that was Manuel Marquez, staff member of QP1281. Now, this is not the end of the story. There were two more days of negotiating scheduled for Thursday and Friday of this week. So by the time you're listening to this, there may be an agreement in place. But then again, there may not. So stay tuned. And speaking of stay tuned, I did also talk to Ashley Wilson, president of QP3913. The text of that interview can be found on Guelph Politico now. But from her point of view, QP3913 is trying to reclaim certain rights and responsibilities to make the local more member run, and that updates to the QP National Constitution have made some of the present responsibilities carried out by office staff what she called, quote, illegal and inappropriate, unquote. This is what she said. Quote, those kinds of things really undermine our ability to function, so the union thinks these are concessions because it's changing the power dynamic, but it's not a concession in the sense that we're asking for changes to the monetary aspect of the collective agreement. We're not grabbing away at benefits or things like that. In fact, we've increased a lot of the benefits language, and we've agreed to a significant wage increase, unquote. So that gives you a taste of the point of view of 3913 in their negotiation. To read the full rebuttal, you can go to Guelph Politico now if you aren't there already. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. To listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. For all the latest local political news, go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.